an epidemic spread through my classroom. A couple of the girls in my class had been discussing, you know, sort of whispered tones, that one of our classmates, Jimmy, had cooties. And not only that, but apparently it had spread to all the boys. All of us. We all had cooties. I didn't even know it. There was, the girls, they all had to take protective measures against us. There was no touching, no playing on the playground together, no trading food in the cafeteria, at least not with us, you know. It turned out, however, that not only did Jimmy not have cooties, but actually it turned out there's no such thing as cooties. We are all very relieved. When the lie started, I don't know, I didn't know that, you know, when it started. It was like, oh, cooties, oh my gosh. As a second grader, you know. But it was a claim that was completely unfounded in the truth. I mean, it didn't stop the belief from spreading. It spread anyway, because lies spread just as easily as truth, just sometimes even easier. But it wasn't the truth. Back in 1966, the April 8th edition of Time Magazine ran with a cover story entitled, Is God Dead? In the article, the reporter discussed the tendencies at that time towards secularization, toward more and more people weren't including God as part of their worldview, as, you know, things they lived by and the things they believed in. It was an important conversation. But then this week's Time Magazine cover story, with the same sort of thematic, is entitled, Is Truth Dead? The concern now is that more and more people aren't including the truth as part of their worldview. This is also an important conversation and is especially problematic. Comedian Stephen Colbert, on the first episode of his Comedy Central show back in 2005, he introduced America to a new word meant to define just this problem. He called it truthiness. If we live according to, not the truth, but if we live according to truthiness, then we don't have to take all the facts into consideration. We just have to feel what is true in our gut and go with that. You know, you don't need all the facts. Just, yeah, go with what go with your gut. He concluded his little talk in that episode by stating his role as a television personality. You know, anyone can read the news to you. He said, I promise to feel the news at you. Pretty much what he was saying, that he was just going to say what he wanted to believe to be true, regardless of whether there was any evidence to support it. And then, in his satirical way, he showed, you know, for 11 years on his television show, he showed what it is to live and act only directed by feelings, only directed by passions, only directed by our gut without taking into consideration or reason or logic. Truthiness, then, if this is going to go with truthiness, this could take the form of, like, self-deception, as he parodied on his show. Or it's the sort of thing it could be deliberately used to deceive others, or to sort of gloss over the more unpleasant realities of things. So, like, the Korean and the Vietnam Wars. According to the official documents, they're not wars. They are police actions. We use language to get around the truth sometimes. I mean, if a military conflict isn't a war, but is instead a police action, then maybe the rules of war don't apply. Maybe it reduces the government's responsibilities to veterans of such an event. The problem is, though, that wins eventually. We all call it the Korean War, the Vietnam War. They are wars. Everyone knows they are wars. And we're not going to lie to ourselves or play linguistic games with fancy words to get around that truth, no matter how uncomfortable that truth may be. But people everywhere play these linguistic games. George Carlin, another comedian, suggested that the more syllables, the less trustworthy the term. You know, war, one syllable. Police action, four syllables. Okay. When corporations fire people, they use euphemisms as well. They don't just fire people. They are downsizing, or going through, and I found this online yesterday, going through personnel surplus reduction. Personnel surplus reduction. 8 syllables. Fire. 1. They mean the same thing. It's just, what are you trying to lie about, you know? What are you trying to get around? Some people say incomplete success instead of failure. And rather dangerously, abortionists refer to the products of conception rather than... Here's the thing, though. A truth is true whether we like it or not. Like, when did 1 plus 1 start equaling 2? When did a right triangle start equaling... In a right triangle, did a squared plus b squared start equaling c squared? When did 11 start being a prime number? Always. Well, they're always true, regardless of whether or not there was anyone around to know them or to believe in them. They're just true. They're never not true. They're just truths. And God is one such of those eternal truths. God is true in the same way that 1 plus 1 equals 2, but in a bigger way, you know? He's always true. And these sort of eternal, lasting truths, whether we like them or not, of God's existence, of God's personality, of God's ways, of God's love and God's mercy, they cannot change and they will not change. Even as discussed in the 60s, people don't take them into consideration anymore. He's not going to stop being true. Many of these truths, we understand, they're accessible by reason. We can reason ourselves toward them. And there's a wonderful video of Peter Kreeft, who's a teacher at the University of Boston. And he's got a video on YouTube that I put on the Facebook page. And he explains the different proofs for God. And it's a great little video, and I'm not going to talk about them now, because I want to talk about some other truths about God that are conveyed to us by Jesus' life, or by Jesus' action, or by his storytelling. Because when Jesus tells a parable, prodigal son, the mustard seed, the good Samaritan, he's always conveying truth, even though he isn't conveying facts. I mean, everybody knows that he's telling a story with fictional characters. There's no facts in these stories, but they're definitely true. We definitely get truth out of them. I mean, the same would be true of Aesop and his fables, you know, the boy who cried wolf. There's no factual account of a boy who cried wolf, but we understand the truth of that story and of all those fables and of all Jesus' parables. The same can be said of the creation stories in the book of Genesis. There's two different accounts of God's creation of the world and of the universe in the book of Genesis, and they both tell us the truth, even though they might not be completely factual. But even still, they are more important in their truth than even the scientifically truthful and the scientifically factual accounts of the Big Bang, which is also true. It's just looking at the same thing from a different angle. They don't contradict each other. So the truth that we hear, like in the reading today, in this account from the Gospel of John, is that there was a guy named Lazarus. He died, was buried in the tomb for 4 days, and then Jesus showed up and caused the guy to live again. Was an astonishing and undeniable truth. As undeniable as 1 plus 1 equaling 2. That the people there, they had not encountered this before. They saw the guy die, they put him in the tomb for 4 days. No one lives without food, water, or whatever for 4 days. They know that he was dead. And they also know that Jesus showed up and he came back to life. The eternal truth that the people there had newly learned was that God had power over life and death in ways that they didn't understand until they saw this happen with their own eyes. And it's a truth that's going to stay with them, and it's a truth that they're going to pass on to others. Interesting like that. You can keep it and you can pass it on at the same time. We've got to be concerned for the truth, for understanding the truth and sharing it. I noted last week, in my homily last week, that the university system, like the system of colleges, universities, having degrees and stuff, that grew out of Christianity in the 1100s, precisely because of this concern that Christians have for having and sharing the truth, that not all religions and not all philosophies have. We should always be concerned for the truth, and they will not contradict each other. If we find the truth, we have found the truth, whether it's scientific truth, or historical truth, or mathematical truth, or moral truth, or theological truth, the truth about God.